Hello and welcome to Criminal Justice Knowledge. My name is Natalie Miller and I'm very pleased to welcome my guest today, Dr. Christine McKenzie, one of the faculty members here at Humber in both the Child and Youth Care degree program as well as the Community Development degree program. Thank you very much for joining me today, Christine.
Thank you.
So today we're going to be talking about Marxist theory. So what is Marxist theory exactly?
So Marxist theory was developed first, of course, by Karl Marx, also Friedrich Engels, in the 19th century in Europe. And that was a time when they were looking at a lot of rising technology, a lot of political change. And he's usually thought of as an economist or someone who focuses on the economy a lot. But he originally was really a philosopher who was concerned with the idea of what does it mean to be free. So he was looking at that and focused on that and the development of society from an economic perspective. So really looking at how does the ways that we react to material change, how has that changed over time? So another term you hear a lot related to Marxism is historical materialism, which basically just means material things dictate a lot of our lives, and how has that changed over time? So really looking at how are things produced, how do we control resources, and how has that been different over time? Basically, because people need to change in reaction to their environment in order to survive, right? You couldn't just throw a person out into the middle of the woods and hope that they'd live, right? We need to have food, we need to have shelter, and all that requires the organization of resources and also the organization of people to make it all happen. So he saw that as a really important thing to think about in terms of our freedom, because that can create freedom, our relation to that, or it can limit our freedom. So labor was a big thing that he looked at. How is labor organized? So labor basically meaning the work it takes to create that food, that shelter, and the stuff that we need to survive. And he broke that down into two different things. The modes of production, like how are things produced in terms of the tools, the technology that's used, and how do we relate to this production? So how are people organized around that was a big thing. So from that came economic classes, having like a working class and a ruling class. So those have been termed in different ways. So like back in the day, he talked about the bourgeoisie. We don't really hear that term used too much, but we hear maybe the haves or the ruling class, or more recently people talking about like the 1%. So that would be the people that control the wealth as well as the means of production. So they have the money, they own the factory, they have the tools, they kind of decide how all of that happens, versus the have-nots, which back in the day were referred to the proletariat. So that would be like the working class or the 99%. So those are people that don't own wealth. They don't have control over the means of production. They don't own factories. And I think a really important point is that they also don't have the means to attain it. So if you're proletariat, working class, 99%, you will always work in the factory. There's at no point within the structure is there the opportunity that, like, tomorrow I'm just going to buy the factory. It doesn't really work that way. So his big questions around this were, well, what happens to the things that are produced? Because eventually production became so efficient that we had more stuff than we needed, right? Was it just about we have food and shelter and now it's all good? It's like production continued. So there's a surplus and there's value that comes from that surplus. So who's deciding what happens to that and who is benefiting? Those were the big things that he looked at, which of course circle back to that question of what does it mean to be free? So conflict theory is sort of the big theory behind Karl Marx as well, which was all about how is power related to these questions and how is inequity related to these questions. So of course the means of production, the relations of production are creating these inequities. And he also focused on what he called the superstructure. And this is where we get into the part about crime and the law. So I am getting there. So superstructure is what he saw as being the way that relations of production were structured over top of material reality. So it's like we have the material reality of like the food and the shelter and people working in the factories, but what is governing all that is the superstructure. So that would be like the law system or the education system or the healthcare system or the government, largely speaking, right? And he saw that the superstructure reflected those relationships between the powerful and the powerless, and that these became agencies of social control as much as anything that dictated the historical materialism, that dictated the relationships between people.
So how would Marxist theory explain why crime is occurring, or why individuals or a group of individuals or society commit crimes or start to engage in criminal behavior?
Yeah.
Does that go off of that power imbalance that we're seeing part of those socioeconomic statuses?
Yeah, so most directly Marx saw that crime is a natural outgrowth of capitalist society, so that built in with there being people that have and people that don't, there's going to be theft. There's going to be people that want to take what is not deemed as theirs in order to survive or to prosper in the system. But he also said some other interesting things that take it like a step further that I think are very interesting and I'd like to talk about. And the first, the one would be there that the formation of the laws at their very core are built into this superstructure and reflect the haves and the have-nots and where we're at in terms of historical materialism, how we're relating to changes over time. So he said that the law formation does not really represent at all a consensus in values. So it's not like everyone comes together to agree what is important. It's the ruling class, it's the 1%, it's the haves that are deciding what the laws are, and that those are created in their own interests. So we see things that have quite a prominence, like property crimes, right? There's always going to be policing and laws to protect property. But who owns the property, right? It's the bourgeoisie, the ruling class. And also we could point to another example on the opposite side, something like inheritance tax, right? Like, if I'm very wealthy and I pass money on to my children, a very small relative percentage of that is taxed. There's a law that's dictating that. I mean, there have been people that have looked at this and said, well, if the only thing that ever changed was inheritance tax, we could have much more equity in our society.
We hear the word alienation a lot, especially when it connects with Marxist theory. So what is alienation? How does it connect to Marxist theory and even further into crime itself?
Right. So Marxist theory talked about alienation as being alienated from the means of production. So what that means is, if I'm back in the day, like the person working in the factory, because there was really only the factory owner and the factory workers, if I'm not connected to owning the resources that are going into that, if I'm not connected to owning what's being made in the factory itself, then I'm detached from that. I don't really care about it too much beyond what's my wage that I'm going to get so I can, you know, eat tonight. And so he termed that as alienation, that sort of disconnection between what someone is actually doing and what they're producing, and they themselves, their own identity. So he saw alienation as being a huge problem in society because it creates this whole mass of people who, in essence, don't care, right? They're not connected to what they do on a daily basis, and therefore they're not as invested. So he saw that people's behavior was molded by this either lack of attachment or lack of attachment to themselves, to their jobs, to their society. And then he saw that crime was not only because people needed the things that they were going to, let's say, steal or murder someone for, but also just like a lack of connection in general, so that they weren't seeing purpose.
Right. So how would that lead an individual or a group of people to a criminal behavior or engaging in criminal behavior?
Yeah. Well, it could be they're not seeing themselves connected to other people. They're not seeing that it matters that they're breaking and entering, stealing, doing property damage, because that's not their own. They didn't produce it. They don't own it. So it can express itself in a myriad of ways.
How does that really look at the prevalence of crime in society?
Well, it would explain it because throughout history, since we've been in the historical moment of capitalism, there is structured in always to be haves and have-nots, and over time that's only growing. You know, we talk about the disappearance of the middle class and the 1% versus the 99%, which, you know, mathematically is fairly accurate, right? So at one time, there may have been more people considered haves. So the prevalence of crime or the alienation increases over time, which could be something that points to, you know, increased alienation.
So are there, and under Marxist theory, are there certain groups or certain types of people that are more inclined to commit crime versus, of course, the haves and have-nots, or the have-nots more inclined to commit crime versus
right.
the haves?
Well, that's interesting, because that's something I wanted to focus on, was also something that not so much Marx himself, but more neo-Marxists, like people who've taken up Marxist theory and developed it further, have talked about. The severity of crime, the focus on crime and crime prevention. And so people have noted that crime is found in all classes of people. So it's not just people who are stealing for their livelihood, but that crime itself is defined by the ruling class, Marx would say. So that element of social control, like you either conform to the laws or you're going to be punished, but that crimes of the working class, the types of crimes that the working class or the 99% commit, are seen as more serious. So break and enters, thefts, murders, get more focus in general. We see more focus on those in the media, more fear about those types of crimes, more law enforcement around those kinds of crimes, more laws around those types of crimes, more policing effort, while at the same time, the kinds of crimes that are found in the ruling class, like white-collar crimes or corporate crimes, are for the most part largely ignored, or if they are taken up, the crime, the punishment is not as severe. Also because you can buy your way out in a way that working-class people can't, right? So we can see this in the way that profit comes before safety, for example. So corporations often will find it more profitable to pollute or not have proper safety regulations in place because the fine for being caught doing that is less than the profit they're going to make. But there's not laws that are really enforcing that. So we see things like oil tanker spills, product safety recalls, food recalls, you know, with increasing intensity. And so Marx would say that the way crime is structured is also inequitable,
mm-hmm.
right? In terms of, you know, if you look for crime in a certain area, you're probably going to find it because it's everywhere. But
mm-hmm.
where is the focus?
Mm-hmm.
So Marx would say that really dictates criminality in a certain sense, right?
So would that look at how our laws are created and our legal system is created to affect the have-nots or the proletariat? That criminalizing their behavior versus criminalizing larger corporations or the wealthy?
Disproportionately, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone named Bago, this is from 2009, made a really interesting point that the legal system itself is designed to maintain capitalism, to keep working class or the 99% in a state of being powerless
mm-hmm.
and in poverty. And even the way people move through the criminal justice system will reinforce this, right? So someone who commits a crime, becomes incarcerated, now has a criminal identity, the way they see themselves, they now have a criminal record, and that has a big impact on their relationship to production, the means of production, as Marx would talk about it. So once you have a criminal history, you're more likely to recidivate, or you're more likely to be involved in the criminal justice system. Or even if you're only in jail one time, now that's interrupted your ability to form long-term relationships and to have like pro-social behaviors, right? It's interrupted job history. People have a criminal record, which might dictate jobs that they can or cannot have in the future. It basically interrupts living a more conventional life, which has also an impact in terms of being able to obtain wealth, right? Because it's not just the job history and the accumulation of wealth, but a certain kind of conventional lifestyle that is kind of required to
mm-hmm.
be the working, to be the ruling class, or to be
mm-hmm.
like the bourgeoisie, as Marx would talk about it. So So that whole system kind of ensures that poverty, oppression will continue, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, another part of that, I would say, is the intersectionality, right? Because Marx really talked about class only, like social class, like you're rich, you're poor, you're working class, you're ruling class, you're owning class. But, of course, this intersects lots of other identities in terms of people's immigration status, in terms mm-hmm. of their race, their ethnicity, their gender presentation, so many different facets kind of intertwine on this point. But Marx would say that, you know, crime in the criminal justice system is there purposely to continue this cycle and to keep people as either the have or the have not.
Right. I mean, this topic, there's so much to Karl Marx's, as we know, and as we've learned, and as to Marx's theory, as well as how alienation plays into crime. So until next time, I'm Natalie Miller, and this has been Criminal Justice Knowledge.